Matt Le Tissier, midfielder and South Coast god. Play for Southampton, Southampton and Southampton. 540 appearances for the Saints, scoring 209 goals, 8 England caps, criminal. PFA Young Player of the Year winner, 3-time Southampton Player of the Year, sat watching TV with Jeff Stelling and Phil Thompson for a very long time, and of course, author. But let's see what the book club thought in today's The Football Book Club.
I'd say it has the feel of a 80,000 word best man speech.
I was once carried off in training after a fainting fit caused by eating too many sausage and egg McMuffins.
His dream team, Matthew Le Tissier in free roll and 10 hard workers.
When's he going to get to Alan Cook's bizarre sex spectator injury? Where is it?
Hello and welcome to the Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read yet another obscure footballer's autobiography. Less Lewis Carroll, more Andy Carroll. I'm Jase Barg, and over the weeks we'll be reading classics such as Steve Claridge's Beyond the Boot Camps and Alan Brazil's Bubbly in Brazil. But today we're reading Matt Le Tissier's Taking Le Tiss. And reading it with me, Jet Bernhardt.
Hello.
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And author, vice journalist and filmmaker, it's Uber Butler.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, welcome, Uber. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm tired from this book.
Sure. You told us you only finished it 45 minutes ago.
Yeah. I've been like, you know, I needed to read it twice. No,
it rewards extra reading.
I feel like we meet all these people, like great people like yourself, Uber, immediately after we force them to read really weird books.
Yeah.
So our introduction's always like, how are you? It's like, I'm fine. I've just...
Yeah. You've ruined me.
You've ruined me. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
So already we're like off on the wrong foot.
No. I enjoyed the process, I think, actually. I think that he is an outside of the box character in every sense of the word. Like, he likes to play outside of the box, likes to think outside the box. You know, he's outside the box, lives out of the box.
Yep.
I'd much rather read it. I don't know why, but it was almost more satisfying than reading a classic.
As in a literary classic. Yeah, yeah. I agree. I feel like I learned loads more from this than, I don't know, Canterbury Tales or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, imagine being Geoffrey Chaucer right now. Yeah,
Chaucer found spinning in grave.
Yeah. You did all right, Chaucer, but it's no Taking Le Tiss, let's be honest.
Exactly. I find Matt Le Tissier fascinating, and that is why I brought him to the table.
Because thank you for doing so.
Genuinely curious about, because he is an enigma, right?
Yes.
So Matt Le Tissier is like a dying breed these days on a football pitch. Like, he's a fat bastard. Like, he's a fat bastard who does nothing apart from being the most talented man on the pitch. But like, he's a fat bastard. Yeah. But he was known as a fat bastard in the era of fat bastards. So like every team had their Matt Le Tissier at this. But like, so he must have been so lazy, but so comfortably the best, the most talented man on the pitch, that he didn't have to do anything else. And then I guess what made me really go for Matt Le Tissier was, has anyone read his Twitter feed?
Oh, yes.
It's a lot of like spooked out conspiracy theory kind of stuff. And I thought, holy shit, this guy is an outsider. He's doing it his way. But no, I just thought, I want to know where that comes from. And he, you know, after I read the book, I was like a bit fed up with Matt Le Tissier. and then I went back and watched his goals again. And then I was like, oh God.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's ridiculous. And you're right. It is a real insight into his mind. And over the next hour, you're going to find out what makes Matt Le Tissier tick. And I'll give you a spoiler. It's Malibu and Shania Twain. The book has 4.4 stars from 137 reviews on Amazon.
It's a lot.
Hell of a lot. I think we're the only people who don't live in the South Coast who ever read this book, I would say. I would say that is primarily 137 people in the Southampton area. Here's a 3-star review from an unnamed Amazon customer under the title, It's a Book. And the review reads, as expected. That's the whole review.
Fair enough. Grump.
There was a table of contents. There were page numbers.
That's Matt's review, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've also got a 5-star one from Pauline called Bought for a Sick Friend. I got the book for a friend in hospital as he is a fan. He thought it was excellent reading. So there we go.
That's good. That's another one of those secondhand reviews that I don't like.
No, you're not a fan.
Then. Not a fan. But there's no insight there.
It's good to know that it has the power to cheer up the needy.
It's a vaccine of some kind.
Yeah. which he wouldn't believe in.
Of course.
Okay, we're going to need to knock these on the head.
Good point.
Get it all out of our system now.
Okay, coming up on the show today, we're going to be going into more depth about the book, doing a dramatic reading, a quiz, and we'll not just be getting to know Matt Letissier, but Uber as well. First, let's go around the group in a sentence or two. What do you think of the book? Uber, kick us off as the guest.
All good reviews start off with a long
It was written... I'd say it has the feel of a 80,000 word best man speech about at your own wedding and you're your own best man.
That is a long. That would be like what, 5 hours? There's so much of it, and also it's the first book we've done so far, which not only has a book in it, it has an introduction, a preface. stats, a tribute to Alan Ball, all kinds of. Imagine that in a wedding speech. All these things kind of adding on top.
I like that stuff.
Okay. The bits that are about 2 pages long.
Yeah.
Uber, I do know what you mean, though, because it does definitely have the vibe of a wedding speech where you're like, where is this going? Where is this going? Where is this going? Mediocre joke. Okay, now on to the next thing.
I'm not having that mediocre joke things. He starts on page X before the book even begins. He says, I've always been a very private person, so there's no sleaze here. It's tiss and dell, not kiss and tell. How dare you say that's a mediocre joke?
How dare I? Awful.
I found the book a little bit like it was a bit. So Uber, you've been fortunate enough not to have to read as many football books as we have. But I found it kind of a halfway home between Perry Groves and Gary Monks, in that Perry Groves was like packed with anecdotes, and Gary Monks was packed with match reports. And you know, for every good story, there's a lot of stories about games which are against Oldham in 1997 or whatever. Yeah. And it's if you're a Southampton fan, it's probably great. But if for us. I didn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, he does this thing as well where he says the result and then explains the map.
Yeah.
So you're not even wondering, oh, how does this one work out, Matt? You know how it works out because he says the result and then he explains the match. It is really bizarre.
Do you know who he really reminds me of? Jay from The Inbetweeners.
Like, really?
He has to, yeah, and when I was reading it, it's like, because it's all about like, shagging and drinking and falling over, and then when he plays football he has to tell you the result first. He has to like shoehorn it in because he knows that you're going to lose interest. I
wouldn't say it's entirely about shagging and drinking, because Letiz does none of that. Like he literally drinks Malibu.
Creepy. It's just weird because he reports.
He talks about other people.
That's the weirdest part.
That is
his own sexual exploits. I'd lap it up.
There's even one bit where he talks about how everyone was watching through a curtain while one of their teammates was having sex.
That is one of the weird, because he also starts that bit by going, and now we move on to Alan Cook's bizarre sex spectator injury. As if there were people beforehand being like, when's he going to get to Alan Cook's bizarre sex spectator injury? Where is it? Absolutely baffling.
There are some incredible chapter names, though. Chapter 4, it's Stuart Pearce. Oh my God. subbed by a fish up a tree.
Subbed by
Glenn chips and fry ups, which is
I like that.
That seems like a middle aged version of what's that film called? Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogger.
Yeah,
I've seen that film twice. Yeah, generally have. It's one of those films that's always on Channel 4 on a Saturday about 11 o'clock in the old days of T4 and stuff. And I've watched it. It's one of those things that I've been halfway through and gone, why am I still watching this? But I've sat through it at least 2 times.
Okay. And yet you are. That's how I feel a lot of the time reading these books. So it's understandable as well.
The book is written in 2010 when Saints had plummeted into League One. And as we'll talk about later, it's not really just about Matt. It is a real tribute to Southampton, the football club, in general, because, he is the most... When you think of Southampton, you think of Matt Letizia, I would say.
Yeah.
And so I think for today, I'll take a role as an honorary Southampton fan, because we have a lot of listeners on this show who are Southampton fans. We did Maya Yoshida's book, and we've done Danny Higginbottom's book in Southampton.
You've done Yoshida's book. Yeah. I can't believe. Is it good?
It's yeah, so good.
We'll really? Send it to you in the post.
It's ludicrously good.
Please no. No, yeah.
No, I mean genuinely, if you want like a palate cleanser after this book.
Right. Immediately I can tell you're gonna be bashing Matt Letizia a bit. Okay, so I'm gonna pretend to be a Southampton fan all the way through, and I'm gonna try and see this through.
Even after what he says about Spurs.
He loves Spurs. He was a Spurs fan as a kid growing
up.
Yeah,
I know, but there's some undercurrents in this book about Spurs, I think.
He doesn't like Glenn Hoddle.
Doesn't like Glenn Hoddle, doesn't like Terry Venables. There's a lot of weird, like, I love Spurs, but I hate Spurs vibes going on in this whole book.
He's gaslighting Spurs.
It's also a very chaotic book, because it starts, like, with his England career, then goes back in time to, like, to later on, but earlier on in Southampton career. So you do spend the whole time being like, wait, where are we? What's going on? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like in a Tarantino film where they'll just like show where that person dies all of a sudden. Like, you'll be like, yeah. You watch and it introduces the characters like, this is my wife. And then it's like, you see her being like, you know, her brain's being picked apart by something.
Yeah.
And then you watch another half an hour of the film with her in and you're like, I know her fate. Like, there's a lot of that with this. It was like, and of course, Franzi would leave us in 2001 because he did, and then all of a sudden it's like, what's going to happen with him? And you're like, I know what happens.
Yeah, I love the way that as opposed to like an Uma Thurman character, it's Franny Benali.
Well, they were both up for the same role in Kill Bill, to be fair.
Yeah, true. That is true. Yeah, just snubbed again. But I do know what you mean, but I guess like you say, it opens with kind of slagging off Glenn Hoddle for not taking him to World Cup 98, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think
it's a love story, isn't it? I think there's a lot of like the relationship between Hoddle and the Tiss is quite interesting.
And I agree.
I loved how he was like, I'm not going to shit talk anyone, and then he immediately starts shit talking Glenn Hoddle and he's talking about like the stuff where he's talking about, sorry, I got this written down, he's about Eileen Drury and all that, trying to take him to the faith healer. That's fascinating.
That whole period in like England football is bizarre because of the faith healing, and we've had a few books where it's kind of come up.
I did think when I was trying to put myself in Letizia's position.
I think in his position,
I would pretend to go and see the faith healer. I don't give a shit. I'd just be like, whatever, I'll lie to further myself. Yeah.
Well, to get in the World Cup 98 squad, yeah, just play along by Hoddle's strange rules.
Yes.
Uber, we know what you'd have done. You'd have found a lookalike of you and sent them to the faith
I'd
healer.
I'd have sent Ellen DeGeneres to the faith healer.
Ellen DeGeneres, Eileen Drury. That's a show I want to see.
Also, I love how Letizia, I don't want to keep banging on about his Twitter, but I love how he calls Eileen Drury like just gobbledygook, and then some of the things he'll put on his
account. I've nowadays. Not thought about that. That's actually, yeah. He's like, his last thing he shared was a fucking video of Toby Young doing a speech, and you're like, you know what? You know who you need to speak to? Eileen.
Taking Letizia. I find it a very confusing title, because who is Taking Letizia? Like, Matt Letizia isn't really taking Letizia at any point in the thing. No one else is taking Letizia out of him.
Mm-hmm. No.
Is it just a pun?
Yeah, it's just a pun.
I think it's similar to the whole thing I was saying before about the why have you done this, why have you done this, why have you done this, unsatisfying joke. Like,
yeah. Right.
I have an on-point anecdote, which should be 15 seconds long.
I'm starting the timer.
And it's a brag. So it starts with a brag. I've an acquaintance of Louis Theroux, and there's my brag. And I was there while he was really, really trying hard to come up with his book title. And he was like, I met him a few times over the base of about 6 months, and every time I was with him, he was like, I'm still just trying to get this book. And in the end...
Great impression.
He went with, I've got to get through this.
Yeah, and the Daniel Bedingfield.
It was just because of the pun.
Yeah, so right.
Imagine Letizia had some similar relationship with like some moon-faced child boy who was trying to like befriend him. And also was just, yeah. But yeah, no, I was there when he came up with it, and it was... it was just like a mild half laugh, and then he went with it.
Resounding yes.
I like the idea that he was listening to Gotta Get Through This at the same time. Yeah. This is a good hang track. On. Wait a hang second. On. My name is Louis Theroux.
Well, there's that mystery. So I'm kind of sad that there's nothing more to it than just that title. But, you know, what have I come to expect? We read Blood, Sweat and Macketeer. So far,
yeah. So. Yeah, it's true. Blood, Sweat and Macketeer is a classic title.
So young Latisse, do we like young Matt Letizia? Grew up in Guernsey, obviously. Yeah. Very different to a lot of the footballs we had. I think he's very, very attached to Guernsey as well. And I think there's a certain mindset he's developed there, which has definitely stuck with him throughout the book. And, you know, to this day, I think in some ways it's why because there's a lot about he's so loyal to Southampton because of the way he grew up in Guernsey. And I don't really know what that means, but I guess he likes home comforts or something. Once he gets to stay somewhere, he likes staying there for a long time.
He talks about how, like, people like, why didn't you move to somewhere other than Southampton, you know? And he talks about how, like, it's actually a real achievement to leave the Channel Islands at all, like, which I thought was kind of had a real, like, the island vibe to it, where you're but like, what?
It's kind of fascinating, isn't it? I've forgotten about this aspect of him, how much that is true. It does, his upbringing on the Channel Islands, it does make him unconventional. Like, I loved the fact that even, like, he's complaining about, what has he got? Oh, like when Guernsey play against Jersey in a final, and he says that he calls the ref a disgrace. And he's like a child. And then he's like, the ref drives him back to his mum's. And then his mum always, little did he know, my mum was at the game and she also called him a cheat. Like, this guy's probably volunteering to be a ref. Like, and I just, like, I could see, oh, there's the distrust in authority. It starts there.
Yeah.
Well, he talks about how he was really good at cricket as well. And how, like,
yes, he does, yeah.
Cricket, and that he was really good at hurdles and everything. It sounds like the Letizia has just dominated Guernsey sport for years.
Yeah, true. He was Guernsey, and then Jersey was Graham Lasso. He's got all the records in Jersey for every single thing over there. Yeah,
so good.
There's actually a picture. I don't think have you guys got a picture section in your book?
No,
any of you? No. There's a picture of him carrying Graham Lasso like a baby later on, which I thought was very, very sweet. Aww. I don't know why I've got pictures in my book and you guys haven't.
Well, I think we know who has the headphones in this podcast quartet.
Like, oh, we know we have to send the pictures to James. He'll be the one who really describes them well for us.
Another thing he does in Guernsey is he wins a certificate of merit for an essay about a dream where he scored the winning goal in a World Cup final. I just thought it must have been a really poor selection of essays. Yeah. that to win the prize.
Maybe he was up against Louis Saha's dream in the World Cup final that he dreamed of.
Yeah.
Oh, have you read Louis Saha's book?
We have read Louis Saha's book. And he spends about 5 pages imagining a goal in the World Cup final that is not real. And I've never been more angry while reading a book.
Uber, you're going to love some of these books. Yeah. when you come on next week and we read Barry Ferguson's or whatever. So, as we said earlier, early on in the book, he goes from Guernsey to join Southampton. I was amazed, and we did touch upon it earlier, I was amazed at how low his wages were. The highest he ever earned was $4,000 a week, which kind of plays into this unassumingness. He didn't really ever seem... you know, fussed to change it to even ask for any more money.
This is what's because I was like, that's incredible. I cannot believe that's the amount of money that Matt Letizia earns. And I thought, well, wait a minute, maybe I just have a understanding of the Premier League being really expensive. And you know, because Matt Letizia started in like the late 80s. But I looked it up. By when he retired, players were earning the average was like 10, 20 maybe. Because 2003 or so, and then Matt Letizia was one of the best players of his generation. How is he not earning more money?
It's true. And I mean, they talk about Hassan Kashlul, who he played with, who left Southampton to go to Villa. Yeah. I think he was offered $25,000 or something at Southampton to stay, and he turned it down.
Like, what?
And Letizia was getting $4,000. I mean, it's coming towards the end of Letizia's time, but you'd think, you know, he'd have been getting more than $4,000 in 96, 95 when he was, you know, really in his pomp.
Yeah.
It's really shocking, isn't it, that? I did actually think, one of the things that I actually did, because I've not read many footballer books, one of the things that I actually really did like about this was just seeing the transition, and I don't want to jump the gun with this, but
the transition between like the old football world into the new football world.
Yes.
It was like a really interesting thing that like at the start you've got him playing 11 games of snooker after like at the match, and he's like, oh, I need to stop doing too much of that. And like, you know, like the manager like punching the players and stuff like that. And you know, and then, you know, them going on holiday to Magaluf, and or them going to like on tour in the it seems like when it starts to change in like East Germany. And like, and he's playing at Southampton, you know, it's not like he's like, I mean, a big club now, like through some of his work probably a bigger club, like, but like, and then I just found that interesting, and the way that it slowly you start seeing these little things like of the scene of this like scenery of football is beginning to change. He's like, oh, all of a sudden there's like a foreigner in the room, and it's like,
certain things you can't say now. Ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of backed up by the way that like he talks about the managers. Progressively, the managers get their reigns get shorter and shorter, but there's still Ian Branfoot, who is a manager that he hates and that apparently everyone hated, still gets 3 years at Southampton. That is, like, compared to what we're talking about now, you wouldn't last 12 months.
Well, especially with Southampton. I mean, not so much at the moment, but in the, you know, late 2010s, they had a ridiculous amount. Something, you know, 7, 8, 9 managers in a few seasons. It went crazy. Like Nigel Pearson, that guy, Jan Portveit, wasn't his name or something like that? Redknapp.
Like, The thing of it being like a brick and mortar business of like the Dell and like all of that, like that, when all of a sudden you've got this hedge fund manager knobhead who comes in, and like I was like on his side, and I was like, oh, okay, so this is obviously like, and he's in finance, and it's like the guy who owned the club who was like, oh, I owned it as like a, it's like a, it's just
this Rupert Lowe,
Rupert Lowe.
That's right. Thanks for that. But yeah, it was interesting to just see those things and the way that changed. And you think about now, and I imagine you guys have read all this, but just like the idea now of like, oh, like you've got a despot who's your fucking chairman. We've gone in like literally in Matt Letizia's life, we've gone like just nearly his playing career, but not quite, but gone from having just blokes who from the community who run the place who are like caretakers almost to like own a fucking like pig farm to like, you know, somebody who's in finance and has never been to a football match before, all of a sudden buys a club like Southampton. Like,
or just an oligarch. It is really interesting. And I think that's what kind of makes the CCA well placed for this book, because he, like you say, he did oversee all that, and because he is such a hero to the people of Southampton.
This is probably the first book we've done where that straddles the old world and the new quite so obviously. I don't think there's any other book we've done that, and I think you're right, it is genuinely, there's a bit where apparently Peter Shilton was like looking for a like ball to throw out to one of the players, and he was trying to go throw it out to Jimmy Case, and Jimmy Case just sitting on a wall talking to a spectator.
Hung over.
And you're like, and this is a league match. This is a proper league match. This is a serious thing. And the idea of that happening like now or in any time in the Premier League is just ridiculous. It's really, it's genuinely fascinating.
I tell you what is disappointing, though. Talking of old world of football, in the introduction, Letizia says, I was once carried off in training after a fainting fit caused by eating too many sausage and egg McMuffins before we even started. Which is great. And then he never goes into that story in the book.
That story,
that's the only story I wanted in the whole book. He never says it.
How many is too many? I want to know how many it was.
Yeah, dozens.
What the Letiz board
is. Seven, I reckon.
I want to know, like, because you would have to eat them all and then go training and then faint. It's not like he's eating them and going like, oh, I've had too many. Because you'd have to build up them first and then faint. Do you know what I mean?
And then they're going
to
hit at some
moment. Yeah, you know, you're going to be like, okay.
Like that's a Quaalude scene in Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah. There's going to be a distance is what I mean,
Yeah, okay.
Unless he was eating them at the time while kicking the ball and heading the ball and stuff. Stuffing egg muffins down his throat.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past Letizia. Talking about East Germany, you mentioned earlier, Uber. Should we do this week's dramatic reading?
Oh, yes. Yes, please.
This story is called Matt Letizia's Doctor Tries to Remove His Elbow. Okay. We went to the tiny town of Ansbach. He's on a pre-season tour of East Germany here. We went to the tiny town of Ansbach. I remember scuffling for the ball and falling. It was a nothing challenge, but I put my left arm out to break my fall and heard two little clicks. I thought it was weird, but I didn't feel any pain until I went to push myself back up. It was agony. I wasn't sure what I'd done, but I knew it hurt like hell. I sat on a stretcher in a corridor waiting for an ambulance, which took an eternity to reach the clubhouse in a remote forest. That was like a horror film.
Were they playing in the cabin in the woods?
Yeah.
Really horrible mental image of like, well, it's only 5 hours till the thing gets here.
The blood had drained from my face because of the pain. The journey to the hospital was a shocker because the country roads were packed with bumps and potholes and the pain was like being plugged into the mains. Our physio, Jim Joyce, gave me a couple of painkillers, but they made absolutely no difference. The x-ray showed I had shattered the elbow joint, the ball of the elbow had broken into three pieces. It sounds horrible.
He goes into so much detail about horrible injuries.
He does.
Why?
He really does. And the specialist recommended immediate surgery. He wanted to remove the joint. Is that a normal thing for someone to do there at that point?
Sure, you remove elbows all the time, don't you?
Matt is immediately cautious about this, and he's not a doctor, Matt Letizia. I think we should remind people here. No. But as far as I'm aware, this guy is particularly dodgy. I said to the doctor, if he did that, it'd leave me with a floppy arm, and he agreed.
I love that so much, as if the doctor is like, oh yeah, you're right. I guess it would.
Good point. Well, is that okay?
I thought the elbow was like the appendix, you know? I thought you could just lose it. But I guess you're right. It would leave you with a floppy arm, wouldn't it? Yeah.
I panicked and told Jim to get me out of there immediately. There was no way I was going to be left with a dangly arm. I was beginning to doubt whether this guy was even a real doctor. He lives in the woods, as far as we know. So.
We drove to what I thought was a hospital, but could have easily just been a big oak tree.
And a guy in a leather face outfit.
Yeah.
I would like to remove your elbow.
I was beginning to doubt it was a doctor. I couldn't believe it, and so I didn't care how much pain I was in. I wanted to go home. We couldn't get a flight that night, so I had to get a taxi back to the hotel and somehow try and sleep. At least I had company on the flight. Simon Charlton pulled a calf muscle. And they tried to remove his leg or something, so he volunteered to come back with me.
Do you think Simon Charlton was like, oh, yeah, I know what you mean, mate. My calf really hurts.
Yeah.
And Matt Odyssey is there without an elbow going, oh, yeah, well, we both have equally bad injuries. We can agree on that.
I went to see a specialist. He's absolutely gobsmacked the diagnosis I received in Germany, and he reassured me I wouldn't be left with a floppy arm. There we go.
I forgot about that trip. There was two trips, wasn't there? And in the middle, yes. Germany was unified.
I think that's unified Germany, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was maybe he had to wait until Germany was unified to get his elbow.
That's why the wall fell.
Yeah.
That fixes elbow.
Guys, I think this book, to me, and we say a lot of books are very partridgey. We get a lot of partridgeisms. I would say this one takes the biscuit. There's two I flagged.
Takes Letis, I think you mean.
Letiscuits.
Oh!
Two bits that I flagged. The game was live on Sky. It was snowing and it was Valentine's Day, which was great because it meant I didn't have to take the wife out for an overpriced meal.
Oh, I was God. God, I hated that bit so much.
And the most, in terms of name drops, is the best one he had, which is actually when he proposed to his wife. He said, fittingly, I proposed to her at a golf club. I have played in Ronan Keating's charity golf day at the K Club, which must have raised £200,000 for the auction alone.
He really likes like 90s like pop music, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is nice, but he can't say that without qualifying it by saying, I'm not a homosexual.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I read out this little
Please
bit?
Please do, yeah.
Okay, so he's talking about John Beresford. I got on really well with him to the extent that a couple of years ago I took him to see Shania Twain in concert. I know it sounds like, I know how it sounds, but I've been a big fan, funny, like he's in before.
Before she
became famous.
Is it possible to be a Shania Twain hipster?
Yeah, like, well,
it's incredible.
He's an outside the box man, he's a man.
means pre Come On Over album, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah.
I was like reading this and I was thinking, oh, this is nice. I like this aspect of Matt Letizia. I was given a ticket to see her at Wembley, but I was quite near the back. So I bought a couple of tickets to see her in Sheffield, but couldn't find anybody to go with. Bez lived up there, John Beresford.
Not Bez from the Happy Mondays.
No, yeah, sorry, it's Bez.
Which would be a great gig.
Yeah. Just Malibu and Coke and Coke. But he was always up. He's always up for a night. So I went out with him. Anyway, at the venue, whatever. Oh, here we go. He was the only bloke I knew who shared my love of Malibu and Coke. There you go. which isn't exactly a manly drink. The look on the barmaid's face was priceless as two guys walked in and ordered this girly drink. And when we told her we were going to see Shania Twain, you could see what a pair of gays stamped across her forehead. Like, there's a bit where he says that he likes someone else who's like a pop. I don't know if anyone remembers it, but
Robbie Williams. Robbie. He says amazingly. He says they had an after match party. I can't remember what it was for.
It was like a soccer aid kind of thing.
The match.
Yeah.
And he says he went and found a quiet seat in his own. He was joined by Robbie Williams, who came and sat on the floor next to him. He said that he has a lot of time for him. They talked a lot about music, and he. Although I'm not sure he shared my taste for Shaken Stevens.
He loves
Shaken Stevens.
Does he love Chesney Hawkes as well? I imagine.
Yeah, he does.
He interviews him when he gets a radio show on BBC Solent. Some Rupert Lowe funded radio station.
That was
so weird.
Shall we make a Spotify playlist of all of Matt Letizia's favourite music?
That's a great idea. We should definitely release that.
Shaken Stevens, Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
And he says that he went to go see Take That in with two of his aunties and says, yes. I must have been the only straight male there.
that is very sweet. He went to go to take that with two of his aunties.
Is this common, by the way, guys? You've read a lot of football books. Is there like a lot of casual bigotry?
Yeah, sometimes.
On the spectrum, this is not that bad.
I would say there's no like. There doesn't seem like there's any like great malice behind a lot of it. It's just him using those words. It seems like because he feels like he probably hears all the time, like, in the dressing room.
Makes you completely understand the ecosystem that allowed. Keys and Gray to thrive.
Yeah. Ah, this is the environment of Keys and Gray.
Keysian and Graysian touch.
Grant Holt also loves Chesney Hawkes as well. It's so weird. Yeah. Do you think it's because of the
Grant Holt walked down the aisle to him.
They all think that One and Only is about them. That's
what I think it is, genuinely. I mean, to be fair, someone like Matt Letizia is kind of right in some ways.
Yeah.
I read something about him on the internet. Don't worry. Yeah. But he was voted 2 months ago as the Eurosport best Premier League player of all time. And it was a vote that other players voted in, including Cristiano Ronaldo, Wayne Rooney, Alan Shearer, and Thierry Henry. And he was voted number one 2 months ago.
That's
remarkable.
I'm sure there's a famous quote by Xavi or Iniesta who says...
I read that just before this.
It says like the player who inspired the most growing up was Matt Letizia.
It's incredible.
It is incredible. He is like... So if anyone hasn't, for whatever reason, watched just a compilation of Matt Letizia's greatest goals on YouTube, it is... It's insane. Like, there's whatever we say about the book, he is untouchable on the field, basically. And that's why he is, I agree with it. He is fascinating because he never earned the money he deserved to earn. He never made the move that he probably deserved to go. And by his own choice, he just kept ripping up contracts, basically. He was offered he had a move to Spurs lined up. And
he had a move to a Spurs, like, locked in a vault. It was like something out of a spy movie.
Because he said that if he moved to Liverpool, he would need a translator. Brilliant.
But it's true, and he that was like in the era when Spurs. That was when Spurs had Lineker and Gazza and stuff like that. Imagine Gazza and Letizia on the same pitch.
He could have gone to Chelsea.
The era of fat bastards.
Yeah.
He was the fat bastard in the golden age of fat bastards.
He's like a skinny fat bastard. He's ungainly. I agree.
The guy, when you play five-a-side, it's the guy with the socks around his ankles who's asking more than you but doesn't want to track back. That's what I mean by fat bastard. I'm not talking about his weight in any way.
It's an active state
of mind.
Right, I'm with you.
There was a joke one of the managers made, which was that Southampton could never play in hoops in in that period because it would make him look too fat. So they had to make sure they played in stripes, which I just love as a phrase, as a thing. But also, like, Matt Letizia makes these jokes about himself constantly.
Yeah,
like, he's constantly making these jokes, and it's actually quite endearing in a way.
But he also, he calls himself God a lot, which, I mean, he was called God by the Southampton fans. He has, he does have like a, for every self-deprecating joke, he does have some like very, very arrogant things he says in a way which is kind of merited. And he'll often say like, yeah, there was another guy who wasn't as good as me, but they kept playing him anyway. Yeah. And I told everyone that it wasn't as good as me.
And then when he finally like unseats that guy, he's like, wow, I unseated the mighty Paul Moody.
Yeah, that's his name, Paul Moody.
And then he's like, oh, I know I'm being mean to Paul Moody, but Paul Moody would be the first to admit that he sucks.
Yeah.
Wow, would he? You're right. There's a really weird thing where he's both incredibly self-deprecating and then is also like, I'm the arguably the most talented player to ever play this game.
It's the enigma. It's exactly what Uber said.
Yeah, he's a contradiction. I also feel like he straddles the boards between these eras of football that are so, so disparate. And I feel like he is a character from another era as well, because like the idea of like of being wed to a club and then not like... When people talk these days about the amount footballers get paid and whatever, and it's like, yeah, well, that money was always in the game. It just used to line the pockets of whoever owned the club. Like, there were still 40,000 people paying loads of money, and players were, like, legally bound to play for clubs and didn't have any autonomy. And it's like, I feel sorry for Matt Letizia in a way, because, all right, he's sort of in control of his own destiny, but he's still getting paid, like, the same amount that some, like, coked-up consultant gets for, like, coming up with a tagline nowadays. Like, he's not getting paid. There's, like, every other player at the time is earning, like, triple what Matt Letizia... And he's...
Yeah.
It's a little bit sad in a way, I think, because then he, like, spills into a different... Yeah, I don't know, a different life. But there's a glory as well.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it kind of keeps up this the legend of Matt Letizia, I think. If Letiz was someone earning, you know, you see, there's a lot of luxury players you see these days. I say luxury players, I sound like such a granddad. But like someone like Ozil, for example, earning 300 grand a week and stuff like that. You know, he's probably Ozil's as like, mercurially talented as Letizia is. But, you know, because he's earning all that money, he just gets slagged off by everyone. But because Letizia kind of sat there at Southampton, With no money on there, everyone loves him even more for that. Whereas if he sat on the bench at United in those days, it wouldn't be the same story.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's sort of what's odd is that it seems to have come as a surprise to Matt Letizia that he was earning so little. Like, it almost like at the end of his career.
End of the book. Yeah. What? I could have earned more.
But genuinely, there's a bit where he's like, were you ever upset that you didn't earn as much? He's like, yeah, I thought everyone was on the same amount of money. What are we talking about? Like, 3 grand's not a lot of money? And they were like, no, it's not. You should be paid way, 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 way more.
And that I think there's something about, like, that also just touching on it not being about money. It's like, there's a way that we're conditioned to think these days, and we belong all to the modern era in every sense of it. Like, but like, it's like you need to do everything that your skill, like you need to get to the highest you possibly can, and that's what life's about. And like, I feel like there's something so fundamentally different about Letizia. Like, I cannot understand why he didn't take the contract at Spurs.
Yeah.
I cannot understand it.
But then that's, I understand why a Southampton fan would love him for that, exactly that. Like, but like, you know, if it was, I love the fact that Gerrard stayed at Liverpool, but it's different, but it, you know. It's,
well, he won the Champions League at Liverpool.
Yeah, he did, but it's still, he would have probably won more had he gone to Chelsea.
Sure. Yeah. That's true. That
but
true.
I still think it's hard to understand with Letizia, because he was fighting against relegation every single year.
I love how you've read the whole of Taking Letiz, and we've barely got any stories from it, and we still know nothing about Matthew Letizia. It feels like we're still questioning him, which I would say...
Yeah, we didn't talk about the betting scandal. When he brushes past that in the book, I was like...
I know, mad.
Unbelievable.
That was actually one of the only things I knew about the book, because that was quite a well-known story, especially around Southampton. I've got a friend of mine who's a big Southampton fan, and he told me about this story before. So the crux of it is... he's into spread betting, right?
Yeah.
At the time, and he has to kick a... He makes a bet that he's going to get kick the ball out of play in 30 seconds or something. Within 30 seconds, he can't get it. And the money's going down up until 4 minutes. He's got to do it. So he's running around the pitch trying to kick the ball out of play in 4 minutes, so he doesn't lose all his money, basically.
Yeah.
It's from the kickoff, so it sort of makes sense, because he would be like, okay, yeah, if you're from the kickoff, kick the ball out of play, you make money. But he is too good at football to just kick it out of play. He can't just overhit a pass, so he does like the perfectly slightly overhit pass, and the player who's on the wing somehow manages to get it. Probably the best bit of control Neil Shipley has ever done. And then Matt Letizia has to spend the whole time kicking the ball about. But it's fascinating because he talks about, like, Bruce Grobbelaar, who is accused of, you know, match fixing and, like, missing in goals and, you know, a betting scandal.
I think there is, after the book was released, I think Hampshire Police did look into it. And they dropped the case because he's, you know, it's Letizia.
Crazy. Yeah.
But it's just, he talks about it like a fun anecdote.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just
but it's very illegal.
Yeah. It's surprising. Because it seems to go from the only gambling he does before that is playing fruit machines over and over again.
And he loses loads of money. At
the reason that I pretty much, one of the reasons that I like the idea of doing Letizia is, again, trying, as we said at the beginning, like trying to dig into what it is that makes this enigma tick. But I found it funny that I said earlier, he's already calling, he distrusts authority when he's playing for the junior teams, Guernsey and Jersey.
Yes,
distrusts authority there. So that was one point. There's a bit where he talks a lot about like the media, and he's like, well, of course, the media. And it's like, it's this like faceless thing. And it was like, there's lines I've written out, but like, you'd probably better if I just like, whatever, I think you've all read it. I thought it was really interesting. The one that I really like, actually, I've got this written down. Basically, he hates the dubious goals panel.
Yes, he does.
He thinks it's a conspiracy. He thinks it's a conspiracy.
Yeah, like, he does. Yeah.
And who's this Swedish teammate, Norwegian teammate who he's got? Emil
Eglosenstad.
Yeah, so that guy scores the hat trick and they take it off him and they say that it's...
Yeah, against United. Yeah.
I watched that. It was actually a brilliant hat trick, but it was like the world's against Matt Letizia, and he distrusts so many things. But, and this is what I found really funny, is there are so many accounts in the book where he blindly trusts the people around him. Like he says, like, so he's really distrustful of any sense of authority or anybody like that. But then if it's one of his mates, it just goes three games from the end of the season, James swept home... I don't know who he's talking about
here. James Beattie, maybe?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it is James Beattie, yeah. Three games to the end of the season. James swept home a superb cushion volley from a tight angle in of the right of the penalty area. He swears he meant it, and I'm inclined to believe him.
Why wouldn't I?
This is like, there's one with, who's, what's his name? Franny
Benali. Yeah.
Franny Benali.
There's another bit where he says the exact line, and then another bit where he says it about Alan Ball or somebody. He'll believe that, and it's like, these guys are probably lying, Matt, and the people. And it's really interesting how he has it. Like, but anyway, so he really distrusts things. And then I was like looking down on Letizia because I have quite a few common things with him. We're both from really big families, grew up in small towns, things like that. So I was like, oh, me and Letizia, we got a little bit in common. But then I was like, but not the conspiracy stuff. And then he started going on about Alex Ferguson match fixing, and I was like, I'm in. I was like, all right, Letizia, you've got me.
He won you round in the end.
Yeah, I was like, I think by the end of this book, I became Matt Letizia.
Wow.
And I was worried about myself. I was like, yeah, he had me at Alex Ferguson. He used to have power over all the referees. And I was like, yeah, you got me.
So, absolutely right.
I've just stumbled upon a gem. Ooh. I found his fat stats.
Oh.
Have you read this?
No, give me the page.
I have.
Matt Letizia's fat stats, the M-Plan diet.
Oh, yeah.
Breakfast, sausage and egg McMuffin. Lunch, jacket potato with tomato ketchup and as much cheese as I could nick from the canteen. Afternoon, two cans of Coca-Cola, brackets, not diet, pack of crisps, of bar of chocolate, and tea, chicken Kiev, chips, beans, and a pint of Coke.
Does he have that every night?
Yeah, this man should be on Secret Eaters. Disgusting. He's got scurvy, I swear.
We try and introduce him to the dietitian, and he does it for 2 weeks. He's like, I didn't play any better, so I'm not doing it.
Yeah. In fairness, he probably wouldn't, would he?
And also, he like...
his dream team. Sorry, this bit is just his dream team. Matthew Letizia in free roll and 10 hard workers.
Are you reading the book live on the podcast? Yeah.
I got to the end of all the chapters and I thought, I'm not reading 25 pages of stats, but it turns out it has some gems in it.
It does. The stats actually are some of the best bits, weirdly.
That was literally exactly what I did. So I got to the end of that and I thought, yeah, this is the book. I've never seen listing quotes about themselves at the back of a book.
Well, there is, it is fascinating because it's not just that. It's after he finishes playing, the book ends with a couple of chapters about Southampton from when he wasn't even there. It's just him talking about Southampton.
I would argue that's not where it ends. That is basically halfway through the book. And yeah, I was right, like, right. What are we going to do now for the rest of the book? And he just starts talking about Southampton like he's a fan, like you've been trapped in a pub by the Southampton fan being like, then Rupert Lowe got Harry Redknapp in. Can you believe it? And you're like, you weren't there. Why am I reading this?
It's a bit like, do you remember Darren Huckabee retired and he started writing Norwich match reviews?
That was endearing because he'd be like, I still keep up with Norwich every so often. Matt Letizia is like, and then we move on to like seven, and like it's like not 100 pages, but it's something like 80 pages.
Of yeah, it's a lot of pages. So I mean, there is a bit when he tried to buy the club. That's still about two chapters after he's, you know, talked about them getting relegated into League One when he wasn't there. Yeah.
Does anybody, so obviously since this, there's been 10 years, and in that time, Southampton have become a very successful club.
Yeah.
And are like absolutely smashing it. Currently, like, what are they, second or third in the league?
Yeah, third or fourth, yeah.
And also Matt Letizia has lost his job. So at Sky, after, and we know how much he loves that.
He writes a whole chapter about it.
He really does.
That's quite nice, that bit, I thought.
It's quite fine. I preferred the like away at Oldham to that. What does everyone think that Matt Letizia is going to do now? I mean, he's on, there's no after dinner circuit because I do public speaking and that part of my income has gone. So Matt Letizia is also not earning any money doing that.
Maybe Rupert Lowe will buy another radio station. Give him the breakfast show.
Just interviewing him and Chesney Hawks.
Rupert Lowe buys NTS.
I would love to listen to a podcast that was just Matt Letizia talking to Chesney Hawks every week.
The last thing I wanted to mention was the worst chapter in the book is when he just talks about being a caddy for a golfer I've never heard of. For about three after he finishes.
And he's like, oh, I told him not to use that club. He used the other club, and then that didn't go very well. And I was like, I risked the urge to say, I told you so. It's like, why am I... Go back to talking about Southampton when you weren't there.
Richard Bland is his name, which is a very fitting name. So that's the book, I guess. Long. Oh, it ends with loads of tributes from fans, including one which is from Tim, which says, I have three heroes, Morrissey, Mandela, and Matt Letizia.
Now that Mandela's going to become a conspiracy theorist as well.
Poor Tim, that hasn't worked out too well.
Yeah.
That sounds like someone's Tinder bio or something.
Yeah.
I've definitely swiped on that person as well.
Did this book change you guys, Uber?
I mean, I'd become Matt Letizia, so... I've realised...
For the better.
I don't know. I guess that it's... has it changed me? It's too soon.
Okay. We'll come back to you at the end of the series.
Come back in a year.
Quick rating out of 10. Tash.
4.
Okay. Jack.
5.
Uber.
5's good. I'll go 6.
I was going to go for... I'll go for 6 as well. Yeah, I'm with Uber there, so that's what? 21 by 4. 5 and a quarter.
5 and a bit.
Yeah, 5 and a quarter. Right. I say so. It wasn't a bad book, I didn't think. It was quite funny at times and just very long.
There's a lot of talking also about his nose and being like, I got a really big nose. And then Phil Thompson turns up at the end being like, I've got a big nose as well. It's just like people chatting about their noses for pages and pages and pages.
We didn't touch on at all. It is quite beautiful, the relationship that he has with the Southampton fans.
Definitely.
Yeah. And actually the while I think that the last 40 pages where it's just tributes is a shocking amount of filler. it is very sweet. You see a lot of Southampton fans clearly love him.
He clearly loves the club and clearly found his match in life, because he literally every season they go through this same poor start, little bit of good form, awful period, and then they just fucking every year it feels like from the way that he writes it, I'd have to watch the games back, but it feels like he pulls them out of the shit every year. Or they all do together. He doesn't quite say it like that, but it just quite, I can imagine if you're a Southampton fan, you would absolutely love that.
Yeah, for sure. As an honorary Southampton fan today, loved it. Yeah. 10. Giving it 10. For the quiz this week, you're all named after a part of Letizia's diet plan. So Uber, you're a sausage McMuffin. Tash, you're a jacket potato and ketchup plus cheese. You can mention the cheese if you want. It might be long to shout out. And Jack, you're a chicken Kiev and chips. So just shout shout your new name if you know the answer to the question. Question one, what was the name of the Southampton band who sang the song Bring Him On for England about Matt Letiz?
Oh, God, what were they called?
I wrote this down.
Oh, yeah.
Sausage Egg McMuffin.
Yes.
The Valley Slags.
The Valley Slags is correct.
What's the name?
To hear the song.
Yeah, we should look that up. 1 point.
We can add it to the playlist.
Nice. Question number two. Which of these athletics records did Matt Letiz break at school? A, 100 meter sprint. B, 55 meter hurdles. C, most sausage McMuffins chucked down in an hour.
Oh God. Chicken Kiev and chips.
Chicken Kiev was in just before, I'm afraid.
It was the 55 meters hurdles because I remember thinking that is very short.
It is a very short distance.
That's true. Point to Chicken Kiev. Number three, how did Southampton player Danny Wallace describe his move to United to the press?
Chicken Kiev and chips.
Very quick. What is it, Chicken Kiev?
Like the icing on jam. Is it that?
Yeah, the icing on the jam of my career.
Yes.
<So, laughs> Two more questions. What reality show would Matt Letizia consider doing?
Chicken Kiev and chips.
Yep.
It's Celebrity Big Brother.
Is correct.
Why did we never get him on there?
Which one would he said he wants to go on it to slag off Tony to slag off Caprice for going out with Tony Adams.
Wasn't it? He was like saying, yeah, I'll do it, yeah, I'll do it, yeah, I'll do it, and then they kept on pushing him back further and further and further.
Yeah, we haven't asked you, Matt.
Yeah, he's like, I'll do it. I just want to talk to Caprice.
I'd quite like to see him in "I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here."
He said he wouldn't do that.
I know he said, but now it's in Wales. Maybe he would. It's not too far from Guernsey.
That's true.
He's been there before. He's been there before.
It's true.
Yeah, "I'm a Celebrity" next year should be on the Channel Islands. I think.
Yeah.
And finally, what's the record amount of chocolate bars Letiz has eaten during an episode of Soccer Saturday?
Sausage Egg McMuffin.
Yes.
Four.
Four is correct. Very good.
Wow.
That was the bit where I was like, oh, he's a child. He's a child because he's not only he's eaten a lot of chocolate. He would tell Jeff Stelling. He'd be like, Jeff, I've eaten four this week.
I forgot to say, actually, because I normally have a glass of wine or a pint while we're doing this, but because we're doing it in the morning, instead, I, in honor of Matt Letizia, I had one of those massive dairy milk bars, like the 200 grammars with jelly beans and popping candy in it. I feel like he'd be proud of me.
I'm sure he would be, Tash.
Would love that.
Yeah. That's very good. Uber, you got a new documentary out called Sending an Attractive Lookalike to My High School Reunion. I watched it this morning and it was really, really great. Really, really, really funny.
Thanks, mate.
Where can people find it?
You can get it on Vice, all their social media, so YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. It's gone much better than I think that, like, I've had like viral successes before, and as the longer over the past 3 years or whatever,
yeah,
and the longer it goes on, it's a sense of relief that you've not flopped.
Okay.
But so I am very relieved that it's doing well.
It's so good.
It's really, 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 really funny. I'm sure everyone listening, go check it out. Anyone has any thoughts on the book or any questions for us, message us at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Football Book Club on Instagram, or on Facebook. Review the podcast, subscribe, follow us. Any last words, anyone?
I'm trying to think of some words, and I was going to say nose.
Nose.
Oh, nose, that's not good enough, is it?
Augustin Delgado Stan.
You're an Augustin Delgado Stan. Cool. There we go. From all of us, Augustin Delgado Stans. Goodbye. Thanks for listening to the Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, Natasha Daniels, and Uber Butler. It was produced and created by James Bug. Thanks to Matt Letizia for writing the book. But what are they all up to now? Well, Matt Letizia is still a god to Southampton fans, but has now left Soccer Saturday. However, he did smash his most chocolate bars eaten in an episode record before he left. Good for him. Hassan Kashloul is now, according to Wikipedia, a property developer. Not funny, but hey, we like to educate and inform too on here. The doctor in East Germany has since long lost his medical license for trying to amputate Chris Marsden's pelvis. Rona Keating's still playing in charity golf days, whilst also angling for a slot on Rupert Lowe's radio station. And Matt and Chesney Hawks get in touch if you're up for doing a podcast together. We'll see you next week for more Football Book Club. Until then, please review and subscribe. Bye-bye.